Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, and I'm here with my co-host, Judy Davis. And today, Judy and I have our Dacium hats on again, and we are digging into self-care. Now, I think this is a tough topic, honestly, because it's become such a punchline in our society. Everyone is wearing their exhaustion and their stress like it's this huge badge of honor. And if you're not exhausted and stressed out and a total mess, you know, if you're not a hot mess, you're nothing.
It's so true. I mean, how many times do we, how are you doing today? I am so busy. I'm so stressed out. And it's like, they say it with their chest pumped up and a lot of emotion in their face. And it just makes me crazy. And I find myself doing the exact same thing sometimes, even though I know that from experience, it is so important to take care of ourselves. It's just,
You know, you are actually my reminder too, because, you know, we all have experience with stress, but yours was so, I want to say blatant, and that's not exactly the word I want, but yours was so intense that it's a reminder to me. So Judy, I'm going to ask you, I know it's personal, but can you share what happened to you when you did not take care of yourself?
Well, it's interesting because I never thought much of self-care. I mean, when I look at it just in general, I thought, well, as long as I eat right and drink water and, you know, take a good walk every now and then, I'm taking care of myself. And I was reminded so acutely of how I wasn't doing that one day. And it was a few years ago, and it was like a typical afternoon. And I was just grocery shopping at a local store, and my phone rang, and this was when my son was in high school. And the nurse was panicking on the other line, and she was like, what do I do? You know, can I call the ambulance for your son? And as a parent on the other side of it, I'm like, if you're calling me to ask if you can get an ambulance, what are you thinking? Of course, get an ambulance. So I beeline straight to the school, and I actually beat the ambulance there to find my son in a chair, literally unable to speak. He was slurring his words. He was completely shaking. He was not okay. And when we got to the hospital, subsequently he was admitted, and they found out that he had had a stroke, and which was so strange because it came out of the blue. He was
for a high schooler.
Yes.
I mean, that's,
it's crazy.
Unexpected.
You know, very unexpected. And so you can imagine what it was like. And to top it all off, my husband happened to be deployed at the time. So he was way overseas in Iraq, and I had to deal with it all on my own. And I did what any other parent would do. I put my big girl panties on, and I got down to taking care of business and taking care of my son. And over the next 3 or 4 months, we actually in and out of doctors, trying to make sure that he was okay, trying to uncover why this happened. And I did everything for him. And I ignored all the little warning signs of not feeling well, knowing that something was a bit off. I was a lot more tired than usual. My heart was racing a little bit every now and then. And I just attributed it, kind of dismissed it to the situation instead of looking at it for what it really was, a warning sign about my health and the fact that I wasn't taking care of myself. Fast forward, things started to settle down and I could slowly relax. I found myself in the back of an ambulance on my way to the hospital because I was having heart issues. And it was in that moment that I realized how much being a parent and taking care of everything in my family and my children was just something that I put above every one of my own needs. And my family would pay the price of me not taking care of myself if I would have had a more dire outcome of those heart issues.
Right. I mean, you almost made your family pay the ultimate price. I mean, you could have died from the issues that you were having. Fortunately, right. Thankfully, you are here and healthy now.
Right.
But that isn't something we think of when we think of self-care.
Right.
We tend to do, I don't know, it seems to me when I talk to people, self-care is this very light sort of a topic.
Exactly.
And you're teaching us that it is nothing like that. It is not light. It is not minor. It is not inconsequential. It is life and death.
Right. And, you know, when we think of self-care, we think of, let's go to a yoga class and get zen in the moment. Let's decrease our stress so that we can do all the things we have to do in our lives. And really and truly, self-care is much deeper than that. And I wish as a society, we talked about it not being so light and fluffy. Because if you don't take care of yourself, you know, we laugh about on the airplane, the little prep thing that they say when this comes down,
oxygen.
Put your oxygen mask on first before you help anyone else. And we all dismiss that little blurb that they say because we don't know that that really could be life or death. And I think that sometimes self-care, the idea of self-care gets that dismissive attitude from us all because we don't think anything bad can happen to us at all.
Yeah, we don't think anything bad can happen. And, you know, like you just said, and yoga is a great self-care strategy. I don't Absolutely. Want anyone to think it was one of your core strategies for healing yourself. Mm-hmm. But it's more the way we think about it and the way we talk about it. So I really would like to go there. And Judy, I know in your book, there were five real strategies that you shared for flushing the stress. Can you share just at least some of your brilliance with us?
Absolutely. And, you know, I came to these strategies in that whole healing of myself because I realized that I had to do something different and I needed specifics. I'm an action person and I needed to know exactly what I needed to do. So I came up with five strategies and two of them are ones that are key that I still do and work on doing every day. And the first one is making myself a priority. Because how often do we as parents take care of everyone around us first? And I love that feeling of knowing that I can help someone make a difference in someone's life. And until I gave myself permission to really and truly focus on making sure that I was okay taking care of myself first. And in doing so, I was able to look at the priorities in my life and assess them and uncover patterns of my behavior. So when I talk about making yourself a priority, it's like, how are you behaving in ways that you are not a priority? How is that preventing you from taking care of yourself? And for me, by doing things and making sure that everyone else had what they needed, it left very little time for me to get what I needed. And so I had to start listening better. I had to start listening to myself and I had to start listening to the people around me because just because they said, I don't know how I'm going to get my kids, you know, a friend might be having a conversation with me and said, I don't know how I'm going to pick up my kids and get someone else to soccer. I'd be the first person to step in and go, oh, I can help. I can pick up child number two of yours without even thinking or listening to the fact that they weren't asking me to do it. I just jumped in and fixed it and added more to my plate. And so listening is key to making yourself a priority. It actually helps us identify situations that need our attention and stay away from situations that we have no business being part of. And as a parent, I did that a lot. I jumped in when my kids really didn't need it. And I know Sandy as my friend, you used to say that to me all the time. You know, Heather and Alex could actually probably do that themselves. I'm like, yes, but they're so busy. You know.
Well, and that it's easy to see when it's someone else. I did it too. My kids, as they got older, would actually look at me. They'd say something and I would start to speak and they'd just look at me and go, I don't need you to fix it, or I've got this. And I'm like, wow, there's a wake up call. So yeah, it's a natural thing as a mom, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, that making yourself a priority and using that listening technique to find those situations where you can actually help and you should help and it makes sense for you to help, as opposed to just blanketing helping at the cost of yourself. So that's the first one, make yourself a priority. And the second thing that I believe is so key to self-care is cutting the yuck from your life. And I laugh because there's a lot of different ways that you can do that. But one that I adamantly, I know for myself, it is hugely important, is to cut caffeine, sugar, alcohol, and nicotine. I am a sugar person, especially when I'm stressed out. Gummy bears are my kryptonite. Haribo should not be a company anywhere in the world because they just went, oh, this is something Judy will love when she's stressed. Let's make another kind of version of it. So, you know, coffee and sugar are my two things to go. And I am not going to get on here and say that you cannot wake up to Folgers in your cup or that you can't have gummy bears when you want, right? That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that I want you to look at how you use food or chemical crutches to push yourself to go beyond what is actually healthy for you to do. So
I want to back up just a second, because that was really huge. Look at how you use food or chemical crutches to push yourself beyond what you can do.
Right.
So if you're chugging caffeine because you're going to have to stay up late to get all these extra things done, or you're pounding gummy bears because you can't take the time to actually process your feelings with a healthy coping strategy, and you can eat gummy bears while you're doing other things, those are indicators that you're not taking care of yourself. Is that where you're
going? Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And what you're doing is you're setting yourself up to have the big crash or the big crisis later. I see so many of us moms, we have our full day, right? And then we have to pick up the kids and take them to soccer practice or whatever and get dinner on the way and then get home for homework and get this activity or that activity. And we have already put in a full day before we have to do any of that. So what is our go-to? We grab an energy drink, we run through the Starbucks line, and we push and push and push. And we never allow ourselves to actually feel the true things our bodies are telling us about slowing down and taking care of ourselves. When we use sugar or caffeine or go out and have a smoke, it's one of those things that we are actually avoiding what our body is naturally telling us to do. So if you want to go have your gummy bears, do so. Just don't do it to push yourself to get things done.
I love that. Oh, it makes so much sense. I'm taking notes here. I've decided that's my favorite quote of the show, even though we haven't finished the show.
Exactly. And it's one of those things that is so important. And the other kind of cut the yuck thing that I use often, and I can't even take all the credit for it, because as my friend, you're one of the people that have actually taught me this, is I used to have lists for my lists, whether it was busy, family, business, community, whatever, my volunteer stuff. I always overscheduled and would get in these twirls of stressed out because I can't do anymore. There's no more time. And you were the person I was coming to. So my cut the yuck strategy number four is cut the unnecessary. And I know that you have a really great way, a really great strategy that will help us do that. So
I love this because it goes back to my coaching roots where I started everything. And it's still, this arena is still the most powerful change that I see when I work with people. So I'm really excited about being able to at least get into a little bit of it here. And you're right, Judy, you know, we don't have enough time in our lives. That is the number one source of stress that people will tell you, is not having enough time to do all the things they want to do. And that's because there's so much in our life that's so important. You just talked about that. You know, as a parent, you put in a full day and then you start the parenting routines, you know, for after school or after you get home from work or whatever. So it's this double load, you know, whether you're at home or you're out of your home, in a home office or taking care of the home, there's this double load that we do, and everything in there is important. What are you not going to do, right?
Right, exactly.
And so what we tend to do is just look at each individual thing and go, this is important, and we put it on our plate. Because it is important. And I agree with you. If you think it's important, I agree it's important. But I want you to think about this plate. And literally, I want you to imagine a plate in front of you. And put all the things that you just do every day on there. You got to get up. You got to get dressed. You got to get the kids dressed out the door. Maybe you cook. Maybe you drive carpool. Maybe you work. Maybe you take care of a parent. Maybe you're a caretaker for, you know, one of your kids or a spouse due to extraordinary circumstances. You volunteer. You're on the neighborhood watch. You whatever. You know, all these things that you do in your daily life. And every time I said something, you know, it's another thing on the plate and another thing on the plate. And so it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger until what happens, Judy, when I have this, you know, this big plate of stuff, what starts happening?
I drop it all over.
You drop it all over, or you put something on the top and something falls off.
Right.
So you're either going to drop the whole thing and fall apart, which is what happened to you, right? Your plate got so big and so heavy that you literally fell apart. The other thing that happens more often for most of us is something's falling off. And what this looks like in your daily life is I have a to-do list, and I have this long to-do list, and I'm marking things off. And, you know, and if you're like me, you write down and add stuff because you got to be able to cross it off, because otherwise it didn't happen. If I don't have a bunch of stuff crossed off at the end of the day, I didn't have a productive day. So you write things on there. But every time you put something on there or cross something, you put it on there to cross it off, or you go to cross something off, you're doing a quick scan of the list and going, what am I going to do next? And every time you do that, you're making a decision. You're prioritizing. You're deciding what's more important, which thing is more important than something else. So you make those choices, little tiny choices, thousands of times a day. Even down to little things like, is it more important that I pick up these Legos off the floor or that I get a shower? Is it more important that I, you know, get my hair done or do makeup? Is it more important that I find my briefcase or pack a lunch? I mean, you know, tiny, tiny little moments that we don't think about, but those are all the stressful moments in our day. So if you aren't willing to look at your life as a big picture and say, no, I'm not going to do this, and yes, I'm going to do this, which is not easy. I get that, and I know it's painful. But is it more or less painful than having to do it 1,000 times a day, every day? And then at the end of the day, realizing when you're going to bed that a lot of important stuff still didn't get done. And then to lie in bed, tossing and turning and stressed out.
That is the worst feeling, I think. I laying there knowing that I didn't do what I needed to do causes so much stress about the next day too. So that's awesome. I love
that. Or you get up and then you don't sleep, which is going to damage your health, right? So what I do when I work with people is we go back to the very beginning and we go back to your priorities. And I actually call this working with your priorities of the heart, because you need to do the things that are most important to you. And I'll work with people to not just identify their priority, but what I want you to do is quantify it. So yes, you're going to tell me that your family is going to be number one, number two, number three priority. They're never going to, I've never had anyone tell me they were anywhere past number three.
Right.
So family's right up at the top. But I want you to sit down and take some time and go, what does that mean? How do I actively show that day to day? Am I a person who feels it's important that I cook a dinner and get it on the table every day? Is it important to me to drive my kids to and from school? For me, that was a biggie. That was a connection point that was really important to me. And I moved heaven and earth to make sure I could do that, you know, 95% of the time. Is it that you do the big extended family Sunday dinner? Is it that you have game night? Judy, you've talked about, you know, your family's game nights Friday night. Whatever it is, if it's doing certain chores, if it's having certain events, figure out and write down what are my most important priorities and how do I make those a priority in my life? And then take those things and write them on a calendar. You don't have to do it right away with your regular calendar. You can print, you know, a separate one out to do this, but literally start writing that in and write down all the time it takes to prep. So if extended family Sunday dinner is a priority to you, write down the time it takes to get the family ready, the time it takes to drive, the time you're there, the drive home. If it's at your house, block off time to do the grocery shopping, time to actually make the meal, time to clean the house. Put those things on a physical calendar, and then you will see what your most important things, how much time they actually take.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Sandy, because it's so easy to go, Sunday family dinner is from 3 to 6.
Yep.
And that's all I put on there. So I really, really appreciate you saying to put on the calendar all the things I have to do for Sunday dinner, because I think so many of us get in trouble because we really don't have a realistic handle on what it is, how much time things actually take. So that's awesome. So continue. I need more.
Well, and so that's actually the next step is you're going to do that for your priorities. I also want you to do it for the things that you aren't going to say a priority, but it is a priority. You're going to need time to shower. You're going to need time to get dressed. You need time to eat food. You need time to, you know, do laundry or take it to the cleaners. Those core life activities actually block time on your calendar for them. Because exactly what you said, Judy, we have this tendency, especially if we work from to-do lists, is the appointments are on the calendar. Then the to-do list is all the other stuff that we just expect to fit, but we don't actually make any space for. And 99% of the time when I work with somebody who is just generally stressed out and going, I don't have enough time, it's true. They don't have enough time. And this is how you find out how much time you actually have. But what's really cool about it is it's a little scary to do, but I said, you know, 99% of the time, that's what they realize. And I would say probably 75-80% of people who look at that calendar actually just get this big relief. There'll be a big sigh. And it's like, I'm not crazy. I'm not lazy. I'm not stupid. I'm not unorganized. There really is more stuff than I can get done in a day.
Yeah. So then what do I do?
So what you got to do is you have to go, okay, here's the calendar. Here's what fits. And I said, this is my number one priority. This is my number, you know, and like I said, family, just saying family isn't going to be your number one priority. Your number one priority is going to be family dinner or picking up the kids from school, or your job might be a huge priority in taking care of your family. So you're going to take and break down what we would normally call a priority into your priorities of the heart. And you're going to go, these are the things I'm doing. Put them on the calendar. Also, I beg you, I plead, this show is about self-care. Please, 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 just put some spaces in there for self-care. You don't have to know what it is. They don't have to go in exactly that block. Just put a little bit of time in there each day for that, just so that we know it's there. And leave some holes because life happens. Please don't fill in every 15-minute interval from 6 in the morning till midnight. Because the dog's going to escape and you're going to have to hunt it down. or the washing machine is going to break, or the dishwasher, someone's going to put dish soap in the dishwasher, and there'll be bubbles everywhere. I mean, life is going to happen. So put that stuff on the calendar, and then what I'm going to need you to do is the really, really hard part, and that is let go of some of that stuff until it can all fit on a calendar.
Oh, that is hard, because it means that I'm going to have to say no, is what you're telling me.
It's exactly what I'm telling you. And Judy, do you like to say no?
I hate saying no. So you have to tell me, you can't just leave me there. If I need to say no to somebody, how do I do that? How do I say no to that person that asks me to help or asks me to go to an event?
Yeah. And I actually have a talk that I deliver. Yeah, that right. People pay me to deliver about this. So we're going to boil all that down to, I'm going to actually give you a formula for saying no. All right. Three parts to this. Part number one, thank you. Part number two is a compliment. And part number three is no. So thank you, compliment, and no. And obviously that's not what you're going to say. So what does that sound like? So Judy, you invited me and my family to come over for dinner Saturday. Mm-hmm. Judy, thank you so much for inviting us for dinner. You are such a fun hostess. We always have a great time. Unfortunately, we aren't going to be able to come Saturday, but thanks for inviting us.
I love it. And
yep.
The caveat is, as a fixer and a helper, mm-hmm. my instant gut reaction is, I have to tell them why I can't. And then yep. it's a qualifier if it's okay for me to say no.
So the only answer you're going to get from me on that is squelch the instinct. Now I can tell you why that's okay.
Right.
Once you start doing this, you'll find that very, very few people are going to say, why? Why can't you come? Why can't you help? So the alternate scenario, you said, someone asked you to join a committee. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate your confidence in me, and you guys are doing such good work. Right now, I'm not able to help out. Really? People don't generally go, really? Why is that? Why can't you help us?
Right.
They just don't. And if they do, your response is simply, I have another commitment. And what I need you, everybody who's listening, what I need you to understand is that that is the truth. And the reason it's the truth is you just created a calendar that you filled with commitments. Mm-hmm. So you don't have room for it. Now, if it's something you think you'd want to do, then instead of just saying no, you can say, thank you so much. You guys do great work. I'm not sure I would be able to do it. Let me think about it and get back with you. And then when you go back, if the answer is no, you go back to your formula. Thank you, compliment, no. It's just, I have another commitment. Even if that commitment is to go to yoga class or take a bubble bath. Judy, you showed us just how vitally important that self-care is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was thinking about too, which we don't have time to get into a discussion on, but I just want to make the point is, our kids watch us. And when we don't take care of ourselves, they learn to not take care of themselves. I went through a situation where there was a long period of time, there was several years where I was totally focused on holding things together, just dealing with the household and making sure that the kids were okay. And, putting my husband's needs and the kids' needs and everybody's in front of mine, because we're in a little bit of a crisis mode. And like you did the same thing. You went, oh my gosh, we have a crisis. I have to take care of my son. I can't take care of me. Well, in my case, I didn't get sick or anything. What I noticed though is my kids had learned to do the same thing. And so then I saw them growing up becoming people who put everybody else in front of them. Mm-hmm. And one of my kids is now experiencing health problems from doing that. So we're dealing with, trying to heal chronic health issues. So this is important. That right. that self-care commitment that you put on a calendar is important.
Mm-hmm. And it takes us back, full circle to the very beginning, I think, Sandy, is that when we commit to making ourselves a priority, when we commit to our calendar and we commit to letting go and listening to what other people really do need and not just jumping in to fix, when we do all of those things, we're committing to a healthier, happier self, which makes us a healthier, happier parent. And we're giving our kids what they need. So I know that we could continue on with this conversation for a long time. It's in our, both of our wheelhouses, in our books and our talks and our coaching, but just tie it all together, summary of what we talked about today, so people have some bullet points that they can work on.
Okay. Yeah. So reminding us, you know, what we're saying is self-care is real and it is vitally important. It can actually land you in the hospital. It can hurt you. It can hurt your kids. If you're in the hospital, if you are now really sick, you are not going to be able to parent and to parent well. And then, like we just said, you're also teaching them to do the same thing. So you're setting them up for a life of mental or physical issues. So self-care is important. We need to do this. We can flush the stress and we can start by making ourselves a priority and doing that with listening, starting to uncover patterns of behavior that put us last and listening to what other people really say and not just jumping in and, you know, going, oh, there's a situation, I can fix it. Listen to what they're actually identifying as a need, and then is that an area that needs our attention or something that's really none of our business? Maybe someone's just venting or sharing, or they have a problem, but it's still not our business to fix it and solve it. So that's strategy one, make yourself a priority. Two is cut the yuck. And that is to cut out things that we can use to push us past a healthy limit. So Judy, you shared for you, that was, you know, caffeine, sugar, alcohol, nicotine. And I think those are the common ones that we would use, as you said, so that we don't slow down and we don't hear our body telling us that we need to take care of it and fix something. And then we need to say, okay, make yourself a priority, cut the yuck, find the time to do that by identifying what our real priorities are and quantifying what they look like, then putting them on a calendar, putting actual times to everything so we can figure out how much we can really fit on our plate, and then saying no to the extra stuff that piles on so that we're not dying by a thousand little no's a day. And when we have to say no, we have that formula of thank you, a compliment, and then saying no. And the no is not explanatory. It's just, I won't be able to attend. I can't help out at this time. I have a prior commitment, etc. So that is the scoop. I mean, it's pretty comprehensive, and it actually feels really good to me as, you know, something that is doable. And obviously I do pieces of it, but your side of it, it's been a long time since I read your book. And so there's definitely some new things for me to go back and look at, because I know my stress levels have risen lately. And I was looking at going, you know, back to our coping strategies show that we did on show 10, I dropped a bunch of my foundational strategies. So I'm looking at this and going, where do I fit it in? So I'm excited that I have some ideas there.
Yeah, me too. And you know, Sandy, if somebody would want to coach with you, they can go to sandyfowler.com, or if they want you to speak, they can go there too, or they can go to thedirectiondiva.com to find my book Right Side Up and some other talks that I do and blog posts, and same thing with you. So those are two places that our listeners can go to get a little more about what we do outside of Mighty Parenting and Dasium. So right now it is actually time for us to dig into real talk right after these messages. And today we're going to be discussing what happens when we follow the advice from our guests. And I'm going to put Sandy in the hot spot and make her share a story about what happened when she talked sex with her girls right after this message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child, and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college,
you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back. It's time for Real Talk. And I am excited to put Sandy on the spot today because we have had some interesting feedback about episode 12, and it was with an expert, Kath Hackinson, and she's from Sex Ed Rescue, and it's talking sex to your teen. And people were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you decided to talk about sex. And there were some really great aha moments in there about it, about the whole interview. So if you haven't seen that, but where I want to go with it today is, so often we have our experts come on to the show, and we just want you guys to know that we actually put the information to play into our lives as well, because sometimes, you know, we're parents of teens and 20-somethings, and we need all the help we can get as well. And Sandy, I know that after that interview with Kath, you actually had some talks with your kids, and I need to know what happened.
Yeah, it was really interesting, Jude, because when we set up the interview and we did it, I didn't see that as being an interview that I needed to know more info about. You know, my girls are both early 20s, and I kind of thought, you know, we had the conversations we needed to have. But Kath really opened my eyes to this not being a one-time, two-time conversation, that this is an ongoing discussion, that this is so much more that, you know, that she told us in there. She said, your kids don't want to hear all about the mechanics from you, which is great.
Didn't we all go, yay?
Yeah, that's the embarrassing part. No one wants to talk about that. That's puberty, pre-puberty.
Right.
So you get that out of the way, you take care of that. And then what they need from us is, you know, talking, like she said, about consent and guidance and relationships, and they want to know about the feelings and things. And so it wasn't that I sat down and said, we need to have a sex talk. It was actually the four of us in a car coming home from, we'd do a long drive, like three and a half hours, might've even been longer, family event, you know, so everybody's coming home together. And we're in the car, and we had, my one daughter was playing DJ. And so we were going around and taking turns picking songs.
Oh, okay.
And those, I know we have a couple of friends of ours from college who listen, and they will know Paradise by the Dashboard Lights by Meatloaf was a big thing that we messed around with in college. So if you haven't heard the song, basically it's that teenage song of the guy and the girl parked in the car, and he's, you know, wants to go for the gold, and the things are hot and heavy, and she all of a sudden says, stop, I need to know if you love me.
Right.
And then it's this conversation back and forth and whatever. So I had not really thought in detail about what the song was, and I just pulled it out. And then, of course, because, you know, the kids are in the car, I'm really thinking about this. I am no longer in college. I am now a mom.
Oh my gosh.
My kid's in the car, and I'm listening to this, and I'm like, okay, didn't realize just how detailed this was. But it was funny. We did not have a big discussion about that. My poor husband is in the back seat. Thank goodness for him. He was just in the corner kind of going, oh my gosh. We'd stuck my daughter in the front with me because I was driving and she was DJing. Right. But what happened was that song playing, and just, you know, we're making some casual and funny comments through it, but in in a lighthearted way, I also made a couple of real comments. Not, mm-hmm. I didn't get serious. We were laughing and stuff, but you know, I made real comments and I made the comment. I'm like, that's a real scenario. That's a real thing, you know?
And that's exactly what Kath told us to do.
Exactly.
To take those moments,
yes,
and use them. So I love that you did that. Okay,
yeah, well,
go on.
And we didn't, like I said, we didn't have a big discussion. My poor right. husband was just, you know, curled up in the corner of the car. Poor guy, you know, with the two girls. We do this to him many times as they were growing up. The conversations come up at rough times for him. But what happened was it opened a door. And over the course of the next week, I had major conversations with both of my girls. One, she and I were in the car alone driving up to college, and it probably lasted an hour and a half to 2 hours. And it was all of that. It was that feeling side. How do you know if it's the right person? And well, this is how I'm feeling when I'm dating, or when this person does something like this. If you know, when this guy held my hand, this is how it felt to me. And it was that place where they had these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that moment, like Kath taught us, and instead of going, oh, well, we can't listen to that because, you know, that would be embarrassing, we went with it. And, you know, we made fun of the embarrassing moment. We're like, awkward family moments and all that kind of thing. But it opened the door. And I had really great conversations about the important side of relationships and sex with both of my girls within a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and mostly I wanted to talk about too, you know, when you mentioned this, I'm like, yeah, it is a good idea because like I said, I didn't think I was the parent who needed that interview.
Mm-hmm. But what's interesting, what I picked up in your story, and I just kind of want to go here for a second, is that you mentioned that you opened the door and you listened.
Yeah.
And then my guess is you must have gotten quiet and just let your daughter kind of explore her thoughts. And I think that's the key when we're talking about these tough topics like sex. And thank goodness I do not have to do all the nitty gritty detail because whew, I just don't want to go there, even in the friend zone. And I talked about the friend zone in one of our real talks of, or maybe it was a parenting moment over in our Facebook group, the live parenting moments that I do. And just that instantaneous thing of, I don't want to be the one that has to give the actual details. But you listening and having that moment where you took a song that meant something to you, looked at it in a new way, brought it up with your children, exposing them to it, and talked about how you were authentically feeling and how it was a part of your life in college, which is right around their ages right now, it did open that door. And it kind of brought your story and you sharing it brings everything full circle about what we talk about to parents. It's not about what you say. It's creating that safe space that your kid, especially the teen and young adult years, knows that they can come to without judgment, with and be able to listen. And it sounds like that's exactly that moment you created.
Yeah, I didn't think about it before because you and I have spent so much time learning and teaching about that conversation piece. So thank you for pointing that out. I said very little. Like I said, you know, my one daughter, we're talking like an hour and a half. And I say we're talking. I'm guessing that my actual speaking was maybe 10 or 15 minutes of that time. She would talk, I might ask her a question or say, can you clarify that? Can you tell me more about that? And just letting her talk and not trying to be the one with her answers.
There you
just
go.
Being a person to help her find more ways for her to find her own answers. So it is, you know, it's that place of, like I said, you know, can you tell me more about that? What do you think about that? Well, how did that feel? And just letting her go with those.
So it was more of like a guidance and just a
listening,
board.
Like you said, yeah, a sounding board. Because it's not even guiding. You know, I wasn't telling them anything. The only thing I actually told them was when they asked me specifics. You know, like, they'll, how did you know dad was the one? Or how did you know other guys you dated weren't? You know, then I would tell, but only telling my story and not trying to relate it to them or anything else, just answering their questions. Like we said in the interview, right? When they're little, you just answer the question they asked and let it be. That's what we do now. Answer the question they ask and encourage them to talk.
Exactly. And be authentic when you talk about your personal life story.
Yes.
Especially as the kids get older, they know when we're not giving them the full story.
Yes.
And it makes them go, well, if they won't share with me, I'm not sharing with them. And they shut down. So if you're going to go somewhere, be prepared to go there in an authentic way, because that will help your kids. And, you know, we could talk about this. Was there anything else you had to say, or else I'm going to wrap us up?
We need to wrap up.
Okay. Well, we just want to thank everybody for being here on this episode today. And if you like what you heard, be sure to like, subscribe, and share, because that's how we help other people find us. And if it's your first time listening in, welcome. Here at Mighty Parenting, we are more than just a podcast. We're actually a community that supports one another in this navigation of raising our teens and parenting our 20-somethings. And you too can become a Mighty Parent. Visit us over on mightyparenting.com and choose the path that works for you. And until next time, this is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler encouraging you to be a Mighty Parent.